There really is no American city that does not have to confront the reality of homelessness. And Kansas City's no different, though many say that except for an occasional panhandler, someone holding a sign at the plaza or an exit ramp that says they're homeless, it's a problem they don't really see. So how do agencies and governments start to get beyond the anecdotes and speculation and stereotypes to get a true picture? Well, they can start with one, two, three. Good morning. This is Central Standard. I'm Brian Ellison. Today, we will talk to some who are trying to offer an accurate picture of the problem, and we'll dig into some recent disagreements about how best to be addressing it here in the Metro. It's not as simple as offering a sandwich or a bed. I want to welcome my guest today, Vicki Riddle, who's Executive Director of the Homeless Services Coalition of Greater Kansas City. Vicki, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
And Aaron Doler, who is campaign manager of the Kansas City 100,000 Homes campaign. Welcome to you, Aaron.
Thank you.
In a little while, we'll talk with someone who himself has been one who has experienced homelessness and come out from it. We also want to talk with you. Please feel free to, even now, send us your questions and thoughts about homelessness in Kansas City by email at centralstandard@kcur.org. Vicki, you've been working with the issue of homelessness in Kansas City for a long time. How extensive is the problem?
The problem of homelessness is very extensive in any large city, and it is not based simply on the need for housing. Homelessness is a very complex system of services and needs that are really indicative of how poverty impacts our society. And so what we need to do in terms of identifying resources to support and aid those who are homeless is to look at the overall situation in which they find themselves, without work, without affordable housing, and without an ability to easily access those services within the community.
We are going to talk in a moment about a count that was conducted last week and that is conducted periodically of the homeless population of Kansas City. Aaron Doler, I wonder if you could give us a picture. What is the face of homelessness in Kansas City? Is there any one picture?
There's no one face. Homelessness is a issue with multiple causes, multiple solutions, and many, many different types of people experience homelessness. You have people that are living on the streets for 15, 20, 30 years. You have people that are facing eviction tomorrow, families, individuals, veterans, women. It's really all over the map, and I think that's one perception that people don't often understand, is that the people that you talked about panhandling on the streets, you know, sleeping in parks, is a very small portion, but the most visible portion of homelessness. But homelessness is a much, much larger issue than just those few people that we see more often.
So where are the people who we don't see, Vicki Riddle? Where are the homeless that are not part of our public consciousness?
Many of the homeless that are not part of our public consciousness are members of families. When we did last year's homeless count, and we do it every January and every July, we find that families are nearly half of those who are homeless, living in cars, couch surfing for as many days as they can with one family. Along with the homeless count that we do of people on the street and in facilities, we also work with the school system. Missouri has over 24,000 homeless students. These students' families do not readily identify themselves as homeless because of the fear of being not able to keep their children with them because of homelessness. Now, that fear is to some degree unrealistic because that is not a reason to take people's children from them. But the unseen homeless are those who are in families, those who have children, those who are living in vans, those who are staying in some abandoned buildings and keeping it together day by day so that they can continue to look for housing and look for the supports that would allow them to stay in housing. But that is a very important fact. We discovered last year and the year before, we have equal numbers of individuals who are homeless and equal numbers of families who are homeless.
We're going to talk a little bit about some of the solutions that are out there in a little bit. But we had a comment on Facebook, and of course, if you have comments, you can go to Facebook and post them there at KCUR's Facebook page. Dan writes, "We have more than enough empty buildings in Kansas City that if repaired could solve the homeless population in downtown tomorrow. It's just not profitable enough." It sort of raises the question, is there space available for homeless? Is it as simple as fixing up old buildings?
No, absolutely not. One of the real problems is that while we have documented 12,000 unoccupied properties, almost 10,000 of them are uninhabitable and could not be returned or restored to an acceptable standard of living. Another issue that's constantly mentioned is empty school buildings. However, most of our school buildings that are empty have asbestos in them, and asbestos does not provide a healthy living circumstance. All of the empty buildings would require almost more money to restore them to a suitable habitability for families, which, of course, they were not designed for, or individual living circumstances.
And Aaron?
Yeah, and might I add also that, as Vicky said before, homelessness is not as simple as just housing. There's issues of poverty. There's issues of mental illness. There's issues of drug abuse. There's issues of the difficulty of simply finding a job. So putting people in housing is certainly the first step. But after that, there's a lot of other issues to address that can't be addressed by just finding a bunch of homes.
Well, let's talk a little bit about sort of the specifics. We've mentioned this count. Both of you have mentioned the count that was done. It was actually done last week. It's been done several times. What, Aaron, is the point-in-time count?
The point-in-time count is a count done all over the country. Every year, you can also do it every 6 months. We do it every 6 months, January and July. And the idea is to get a snapshot of our homeless population, do that regularly, hopefully, so we can identify trends.
And this has been going on for how long?
The homeless count has been done on behalf of communities for the last 15 years. Okay. And one of the rationales for doing the homeless count is to identify that snapshot number of individuals who are homeless on any given night. We understand that the homeless count does not identify every person who is in need of housing, but it does allow us to count on a 24-hour basis. We do not just count people on the street. We also count all of the individuals who are in emergency shelter, transitional housing, and who are moving from transitional housing into some kind of supportive permanent housing. And so we're getting a picture of the broad scope of individuals who are homeless and who need services.
And this is not an optional thing, right? This is a federally mandated program?
HUD has asked us to do the count so that they can understand community need, and that is who requires that we do the count, and they require that it be done at least once a year, but they prefer twice a year. And the state of Missouri, with our involvement of the Governor's Committee to End Homelessness, we have determined that all eight of the continuum of care will do the count twice a year to give the best picture possible of homelessness throughout the state.
That's Vicki Riddle. She's Executive Director of the Homeless Services Coalition here in Kansas City. You're listening to Central Standard. I'm Brian Ellison. We're talking about homelessness in the metro area. Aaron Doler, you work with the Kansas City 100,000 Homes campaign. You were very involved in the count that took place last week. How does it actually work? Do volunteers fan out with clipboards and literally count people?
Well, there are a couple of things we do. All the agencies, the homeless shelters, transitional housing, permanent supportive housing, agencies that serve homeless on a regular basis, their staff, plus maybe a few volunteers, count those living in their facilities. So that's one part of the count. Agencies are doing their counts. And then the other part is an intensive street outreach effort that we did Wednesday night last week into and through Thursday at 7 p.m., so about a 24-hour period where, yes, we my office at 8th and Paseo was our headquarters. We had volunteers coming in throughout the day from agencies, from just concerned community members, gave them some quick training, some socks to give out, some gift cards to give out as a thank you for participating, and as many surveys as we can. And we sent them both on the streets where we thought people might be staying, as well as day programs, food pantries, anywhere that we thought we might be able to find homeless individuals or families.
And obviously you have some experience on where they might be staying, but the city has 319 square miles. How can you even begin to cover that space?
Well, we a lot of it is experience gained over time. We have a map. This year, I made a Google map of all the spots that we thought homeless people were. I talked to a bunch of homeless people that we've either housed recently or we meet regularly to ask them, where are people right now? Where are they going? So we have a relatively good picture. Of course, we can't get everyone. But having done this for 15 years, we have a general sense of where people tend to stay.
And Vicki Riddle, as you mentioned, it doesn't necessarily count every homeless person on a given night, but over time, these numbers can show trends. They can show how things are changing.
They do. They show trends about the demographics of the individuals, where the individuals are moving to in the community in terms of where they can find someplace for support and help. I think the most important thing about the point in time count is it gives us a consistent way to compare the numbers over the years in both the summer and the winter. And the counts are different in the summer and the winter because of people's ability to be safe and relatively comfortable. You know, it's very different in the winter versus the summer.
So what is the difference? What would we notice that's different summer and winter, Aaron?
There's a lot of differences, but certainly one difference is the weather, that it's warmer outside.
And so fewer people are in shelters and more are on the streets?
Either in shelters, though I think the larger difference is with those that double up with family or friends. Family or friends might say you can stay here while it's very cold and then put them out when it gets warm. I think we see that a lot. One other thing I wanted to add about the point in time count this year is that some of it is voluntary. We're required to ask certain questions, and then we can ask questions beyond that. And this year, as part of the 100,000 Homes campaign, we added what's called a vulnerability index, which identifies someone's risk of death while living on the streets. And homeless people have much higher risks of death already compared to the general population. And then certain risk factors predict death at much higher rates than others. And so we added that to our survey so we can prioritize our resources towards those that are literally dying on the street. So that was a new thing that we added to the point in time to count this year.
Vicki?
Yeah, and the idea of the vulnerability index is to identify the significant health problems of those who are on the streets, because while everybody who lives in poverty finds it very difficult to afford and access medical care, for those living on the streets, there's absolutely no fallback. And so those people are the ones that are identified through the vulnerability index as being vulnerable to death from health causes on an almost immediate basis.
I want to invite our listeners to be part of the conversation. How is the problem of homelessness real for you? Is it a matter of concern? Is it a government problem in your mind? Or is it a human problem that you think you have a role in responding to? What have you done about it? And maybe some of our listeners have even experienced homelessness themselves. Call us at 816-235-2888. That's 235-2888. And let us know your experience of homelessness in Kansas City. You can also email us at centralstandard@kcur.org. I want to bring into the conversation James Ponder. James is a client of Aaron's. He's worked with him, and James was once homeless, though now he is living in an apartment. James, welcome to Central Standard.
Thank you.
I wonder if you could tell us, and I know that this is sort of difficult to speak about, by the way, that we shouldn't assume that anyone who has gone through this experience wants to get on the radio and talk about it, so I really appreciate your willingness to come and do that. Would you mind sort of explaining how it came to be that you found yourself homeless?
Well, I was incarcerated in 2009 into 2010. We had an apartment. My wife ended up losing her job. I got out in November of 2010. My wife had lost her job like 2 months before that. They lived in an apartment without electricity for 4 months until I got home. As soon as I got home, we tried to find a place to stay. Only place that would take us, since we were a family and we're not married, was Restart. So we ended up going to Restart like November the 28th of 2010.
And how long were you able to stay at Restart?
Well, they have an emergency family shelter that was 3 weeks at that time. We stayed in there a little bit over 3 weeks, and then they moved us to the Transitional Living Program, which is a two-year program.
So a two-year program, which does give you – did it give you an opportunity to get the help you needed, to get your life to a place where you could come out of homelessness?
Yes, it did, very much.
So now where are you?
We're in a program that's called 1,000 Homes. They help us. They helped us get an apartment, and we have to pay 30% of our income. But it's a lifelong program, which is just tremendous. It's helped us.
I'm sure this isn't news to you, James. A lot of people sort of think when they think of homeless folks in Kansas City or anywhere, they think that they somehow have done something to deserve it, that they haven't worked hard enough, that they've found themselves in homelessness somehow by their own fault. How do you respond to that?
Some yes, some no. Some just different turns in life lead you there.
Mm-hmm. I wonder, Vicky and Aaron, from your experience working with the homeless population, how typical is James's story and how typical has his ability been to get out of it?
I don't know that there's a typical story. In fact, I would say that there's not a typical story. And so people's willingness to work hard to achieve the things they need to do to achieve sustainability in housing is all within themselves. And James and his family have worked very hard at it. One of the things you ask was, why are people homeless? Is it their own fault? There's a portion of the point in time count that we do every year that asks people what led most directly to their homelessness. And I think the thing that's interesting for many people to understand is that homelessness is something that is created by a different circumstance. We found last year, and I know that we'll find again this year, that loss of job, loss of income, and then the issue of traumatic medical care, because traumatic medical care and the need to pay for that is one of the things that taxes the resources of those who live either on the margins of poverty or in poverty or at the very low middle income range. And so there are as many different reasons for homelessness as there are homeless individuals. The residual number of what are considered chronic or hardcore homeless is estimated to be 7 to 10% of the population in any given area. Last year, we found approximately 3,000 homeless individuals and families. So approximately, possibly 300, possibly 200 of those individuals are those that have for some reason, usually not a valid reason, it's usually a mental health or a substance abuse reason, chosen to live on the street. Everyone else is forced into homelessness by economic circumstances that are tied to the larger economy.
Aaron, the numbers aren't in yet from last week's count, but based on prior year's counts, we can get some idea. Location-wise, within the Kansas City metro area, most of the homeless population seems to be in Jackson County. Is that right?
Most of the street homeless population,
okay.
Yes.
It looked like from the numbers that some of the Clay County, Platte County had very few counted in the street population.
Yeah, and one of the things to understand about the count is that it's done based on these HUD-defined jurisdictions. Our jurisdiction for our HUD area is Jackson County. Clay County, Platte County, Ray County, they are all in something called balance of state. And they do have fewer identified numbers of street homeless, but then again, in rural communities, many times homeless individuals don't surface for many years until they've exhausted all of their community or family resources.
Probably also fewer people counting, I'm guessing as well.
No, I wouldn't say that. The balance of state, as well as the other six continua in the Missouri area, we do our counts on the same day and with a strong concentration of volunteers. I think it's harder to count in a large area with fewer identified homeless individuals, but certainly there's a big effort to do the count equitably throughout the state.
And perhaps gets at the idea of whether homelessness is just an urban core kind of problem or actually an issue out in suburbs and rural areas too.
It's a huge issue in the suburbs and the rural areas, especially with the housing circumstances that 5 to 7 years ago, there were mortgages given to people who barely qualified, if they actually qualified. Many of those people have lost their homes and found themselves homeless.
If you have had an experience of homelessness or you have thoughts on how to address homelessness in Kansas City, call us at 816-235-2888. That's what Roberta did of Kansas City, Missouri. Roberta, welcome to Central Standard.
Thank you so much. First of all, I feel so honored. I can't stand it. I was very lucky. In 1992, I was diagnosed with clinical depression. My life got better. I'm safe. But I noticed when I spent most of 92 at KU and the State Hospital in St. Joe. I noticed later when I was going through group home program and then individual living, I could see that there were folks in that hospital that really needed the stability of residential care. In 92, it was the last year. Things have so deteriorated since then. HMOs took over in 93. And I heard something about an Osmond Act, but I truly don't know if that's pertinent to this topic, because I may not have recalled it accurately. But ever since, there has been like a ratcheting down of resources and most especially hope. When there is no way out, when we don't have an economy and we don't have jobs, that's a pressure. But when the other alternative is to go and pay for the rest of your life to go to college and try to get a job, that was false hope, and it's misrepresentation.
Right.
It's exorbitant. There's so many factors, as you all well know.
Roberta, thank you for this call. Let me give our guests a chance to
respond
to that.
Yes, sir.
And Aaron Doler, I saw you nodding your head vigorously as Roberta spoke.
I think Roberta told the perfect story of the issues of mental illness and homelessness, that people with mental illness have enormous struggles to overcome and do often. They're in and out of the hospital a lot. Their bills are ratcheting up. They have huge bills. And clinical depression and then all the way up to schizophrenia, it's hard to get through daily life. Even meeting with a case manager regularly can be hard, very, very difficult. And I think that that's one of the things that people don't really realize as much about, especially the chronic homeless population, although the whole homeless population deals with mental illness, that people we were looking at some surveys from this past point in time count, and we have people that are in the hospital 10, 20 times for psychiatric reasons.
Vicki?
And what I wanted to say was that Roberta actually hit on some other issues that are terribly important. The economic circumstances surrounding those people who find themselves homeless. The issue of jobs and accessibility, the issue for most in poverty for transportation to those positions, the entire community's structure with the reducing of all funding on behalf of social service programming or those programs that help those with lesser financial resources, all of those things conspire to keep people homeless, whether they have mental health issues or do not.
Well, and this is actually something I'd like to ask you, James. Roberta, our caller, mentioned the ratcheting down not just of resources but of hope, the loss of hope as the real threat. Is that something that you experienced? Is it something you've seen in other homeless folks that you've come to know?
Yes. I was really becoming hopeless because I have a recent felony, and I can't get housing through the state. No state. Well, they won't help me get housing because of I have a felony within the last 5 years. So my 2 years was coming to an end at Restart. I didn't know what was going to become. I couldn't get housing anywhere because of my felony. So,
when we come back from our break, we're going to talk more about the problem of homelessness in Kansas City and take a look at some of the solutions that are being offered in the community, what works, what perhaps doesn't, and how agencies and governments are responding. So stay with us. You're listening to Central Standard on KCUR. Welcome back to Central Standard. I'm Brian Ellison. We're talking today about the problem of homelessness in Kansas City, and my guests are Vicki Riddle, who's Executive Director of the Homeless Services Coalition, Aaron Doler, who's Campaign Manager for Kansas City 100,000 Homes, and with James Ponder, who has come out of homelessness and is no longer homeless but is sharing a little of his experience today. I want to talk with Anne in Overland Park. Anne, I understand that you came very close to being homeless yourself.
Yes, I did.
What happened? Very briefly.
Well, I was a nurse, and I made a very good salary. And because of a series of health events, I had to have a lot of surgeries, and I had a stroke, which culminated in major depression, and so therefore I became very marginalized. And as far as my ability to take care of myself, I ended up on welfare, and I had a very low rent. So I was able to get through this period with very, very little income.
But you're afraid had you not been in such a situation, you're afraid you might have ended up homeless yourself.
Oh, I was very close to it, and I ended up doing things like collecting cans and doing things, and I became one of those people who people don't see. And I want to say two things. First of all, there's a whole group of industries now which prey upon people who are very marginalized. And I know that there are people in the city that are trying to, like these loan institutions and stuff, which keep people very close to the edge because of the extensive interest and
stuff.
Let
me just ask you to wrap up, Anne. We've got a lot of calls here.
Okay. So I just wanted to say that I'm so glad that you exist. This was 17 years ago, and there were not the networks that exist now. And there's a very large population of people out there that are very marginalized and living on the edge. And thank you for your work.
And thank you so much for your call. She mentions that she felt like she became close to getting homeless when she faced a medical situation herself. What are some of the other causes that sort of drive folks to homelessness, including folks who sort of never dreamed that they were on the edge of that?
I think one of the large issues is the availability of affordable housing. Our housing market is extremely high-priced, and to give someone a home to live in is not the simple answer. They have to have transportation to get to the kind of work that they're able to do and able to secure. They need to get to grocery stores. They need to get to doctor's appointments. And so we do not have a good balance right now of affordable, available, accessible housing that can be provided to low-income people as they improve their circumstance.
You know, I think, Vicki, a lot of people would be surprised to hear that because they think of Kansas City as having a low cost of living. If you compare home prices in Kansas City to the East Coast or the West Coast, they are much lower. How is it that it's actually not a good place for affordable housing for the poor?
Well, because affordable housing for the poor is very different from affordable housing for the middle class. And while if you have a good job and do not have extreme debt, you can find a place to live. But for the families and the individuals that find themselves homeless, they're on the edge at all times. They don't have resources. One of the big problems that we have in the last year and a half, 2 years, is that we have many outside landlords who do not live in Kansas City but own low-income property. We have many clients in all of our programs, Restart, Salvation Army, City Union Mission, who have clients who have paid their rent regularly, but the building has been foreclosed, and they lose their deposit. They do not have money for a new deposit, and they only have enough money for their monthly rent. And so I cannot stress that what the Point in Time Count tries to do, along with our work all year long, is to explore and examine the complexities of homelessness and what people really need, because it is not always just a house.
Right. Aaron?
To offer some other causes, there are, of course, multiple causes. Among youth, a lot of times they might even be kicked out of their homes, especially LGBTQ youth. Get kicked out of their homes. That happens a lot.
Right. That's an unusually high percentage of homeless youth on the street, right?
Identify as LGBTQ. Yes, exactly. And some people even, especially those that are homeless for a very long time, have been homeless their whole lives. Their family was homeless, or they experienced significant amounts of trauma and ran away from that trauma, but ended up on the streets and never got out of that from, you know, a very, very young age. We just have someone who's currently 35, and when you ask her how long have you been homeless, she says, my whole life.
I want to spend the last few minutes we have in this segment talking a little bit about some of the solutions that are out there. And I want to start with a question from Jim in Parkville. Jim, welcome to Central Standard.
Thank you very much. Your guest, James, that was telling his story.
Yeah,
James, keep up the good work, man. That's a great story that you're able to come on the air and talk about. So don't give up hope. We have a group of churches north of the river that is just starting to take a look at what kind of justice issues out there are causing, are the root cause of homelessness. And I heard you say that you can't get the housing through the state. Is that, that something that needs to be changed?
It is something that needs to be changed. And in fact, we've looked at legislation in Missouri in the last couple of years to remove some felony convictions that do not involve firearms and do not involve harm to others from that list. And there is some support for that. But I would encourage your church group in the Northland to get in touch with the Homeless Services Coalition. We would welcome you at our meetings to understand what we're doing and what needs to be done. We'd welcome you at our meetings.
Jim, thanks for the call.
That's great. Thank you.
And let's talk to Allison in Overland Park. Allison, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you so much for this conversation and having this topic. I really appreciate it and the sensitivity and the carefulness to which you're having the conversation. Thank you so much.
Thanks for your call, Allison.
So I guess I have a question. First of all, I just want to say I heard the guest talking about the youth, the LGBTQ youth, and those who experience significant trauma in their homes as children, and I'm so glad that was stated. I work at a domestic violence agency, and of course we hear a lot about sexual abuse and know that a lot of our youth are leaving their homes because of traumatic experiences and then are getting caught up into that whole world of, you know, even human trafficking, but certainly homelessness for sure. So I really appreciate that point being made. The original reason for my call is that I at some point had determined that whenever I see a homeless person that I would want to do something about that, not just drive by. And of course the quickest thing or the most tangible thing in that moment is to give money to the person who is standing on the side of the road or whoever. And I think more for me than giving the money is just the fact, like, I see you. I heard a previous caller say we marginalize and stop seeing these people. And I wanted there to be like a hand-to-hand, I see you. I'm not going to drive by and ignore you. Right. But I've also had people in my car when that has happened, and they're like, oh, my gosh, you're just supporting their drug habit or whatever. And I don't have that understanding in my heart. But okay. I just wondered if people on the panel could speak to giving cash money to people who are homeless.
Good question, Allison. I appreciate you asking it. Vicki?
The short answer is that it's a decision you make, and if you give someone a few dollars and they buy coffee or a McDonald's hamburger, that's fine. The fact is that while that's a good issue, a good recognition for you, the problems are systemic, and so there's no amount of individual money given to an individual person asking for that money to really change the situation. And so getting involved with a group that's dealing with homelessness is the best solution.
Aaron, is that your advice as well?
I completely agree. I think it's a personal decision. It might be spent on drugs, I would say, but it very well might be spent on coffee at McDonald's. And I think the important thing is that you don't know. And I think she hit the nail on the head. It's about your personal connection with that person, your personal choice. I'm not going to advise someone either way. It's up to them.
If we want to talk about other solutions, sort of other agencies and other causes that folks might give more than a dollar to as they pass by, there's lots of agencies. In fact, they're in your coalition, Vicki. What are the kind of the main focuses of groups that are working with the homeless in Kansas City, as briefly as you can?
As briefly, if you look at our website, which is just www.hscgkc.org.
And we'll have a link to that on our website, too,
okay,
at KCUR.
And you'll see a number of agencies, over 50, that provide different services to persons who are homeless. Getting involved with those organizations as a volunteer, as a mentor, as a tutor is very important. But the other thing that we try to do at the Homeless Services Coalition, because we don't serve clients directly, we are trying to create advocacy on behalf of the systemic issues that will change things for the homeless.
So tell me about some of the agencies that do work directly with the homeless. What do they do? Aaron?
Well, I'm the campaign manager of the 100,000 Homes campaign. Our goal is to We're targeting that very chronic group with severe mental illness, severe health issues, trying to literally save their lives by putting them in housing. And so we are – our big solution is permanent supportive housing, meaning we're not just putting people in housing and hoping they stick. We're making sure that we're providing those wraparound services. But we're putting them in housing first, and that's the big solution, especially for the chronic population, putting them in housing first where they feel safe, where they – feel warm, where they don't have to deal with everyday survival. And then we can start addressing jobs. We can start addressing drug use. We can start addressing mental illness. But those things are so hard to address while living on the streets, literally. That's our solution for the chronic population, but that's a small part. Many other organizations are doing other things.
You know, there was a report over the weekend that I'm sure a lot of our listeners saw about different ways that different agencies respond. Some want homeless population to come to shelters or come to social service agencies. Others are actually going out onto the streets, handing out food or socks or clothing. Obviously, there was some disagreement about the best approach. Without wanting to sort of jump into that conflict, I guess my question to you is, if a homeless person is on the street, what do you most want to see happen with them? Do you want to get them into a place where they can receive a variety of services, Vicki?
We do. That's the ultimate solution, is to get people engaged in a relationship that will allow them to see what can improve their lives and how they can get into housing. And while feeding people that are on the street is useful in some instances, the real issue is to form a relationship with the person and to try and engage them in something that will bring them into contact with a case manager who can help them change their lives.
This has been a great conversation. I wish we had more time, but my guests have been Vicki Riddle. She's Executive Director of the Homeless Services Coalition of Greater Kansas City, and Aaron Doler, who's Campaign Manager for the Kansas City 100,000 Homes Campaign. We've got links to information about both of their organizations at our website, and also James Ponder, who himself has come out of homelessness and shared a little of his story with us today. James, Aaron, Vicki, thank you all so much for being here.
You're welcome.